Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Nicole calling from Hamilton, and I needed to let everyone know that I really proudly support Vish and Creative Control. I have for many years, I will for many more, as long as he keeps delivering these amazing interview podcasts. When you hear one of Vish's interviews, you think he's known this guest for years, they're good friends. But the truth is, he approaches every interview, whether it's sort of up-and-coming indie artists or established icons or like famous, intimidating comedians with a really deep, genuine curiosity. So he's never met this person, and the same really warm candor as though he's known them forever. I think it really lends to a great chat, no matter who he's talking to. And for that reason, I think you should throw Vish, like, what, $1 a month? He's got jokes. The jokes make it worth it. Support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Vish's wife, and remember, when you name a dog Janet or Timothy, you are dragging humanity down just a little bit.
Denzel McFarlane, Cole Anthony Humphrey, and Joseph Brosnan are musicians who perform together in a band from Toronto, Ontario, called the OBGMs. Originally formed in 2007 by McFarlane and Humphrey, the OBGMs have quietly persevered in Canadian underground rock and punk scenes, earning a dedicated but small fan base for their supercharged performances and songs. The band's profile has never been higher after their 2020 album, The Ends, was shortlisted for Canada's prestigious Polaris Music Prize, which celebrates the country's Album of the Year, is chosen by a panel of music experts, critics, and journalists. Well ahead of the Polaris winner being chosen on September 27, 2021, Denzel McFarlane and I had a great conversation about his life and times in Toronto, why the rage and threats he sings and spits on The Ends are directed squarely at the Canadian music industry, how he's encountered systemic racism as a black guitar player, and alternative rock spaces, his affinity for hip-hop, and the last of the rock stars, what he makes of this Polaris Music Prize nomination, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 628th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Dens McFarlane of the OBGMs, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Dens, how's it going?
What's going on? You know, doing well. Living the dream, you know? Living it, okay?
Where in the world are you living the dream today?
I'm in Toronto, Ontario, you know, Screwface capital of Ontario. That's what it's called. Of Canada, actually.
Of the world,
maybe North America, at least. The Parisians might have an issue.
That's right.
but Toronto's up there. Top five, at least.
Top five, yes. I'm from Ontario originally, and I've only been away about a year and a half, which I know that sounds like I've been away. I started a pandemic and then I ran away. It's a coincidence. But yeah, so I know Toronto very well. How long have you been in Toronto?
I've been here all my life. I was born and raised. I grew up pretty much down the street, which is a complete coincidence. But I grew up in a housing project called Neptune.
Okay.
And now I moved to Bathurst, Eglinton with my family. Doing well. Feeling nice, you know?
Feeling nice, yeah. Things are starting to, as we're speaking, I believe things are opening up, so to speak. Is that true?
Yeah, we played our first show in Ontario since we... So you ran away and started the pandemic, but I would say that we lay claim to that as well, because our last show prior to the one that we did last week was the day that Tom Hanks said he had COVID. So we are pretty much like the last show in Toronto.
Now
we're back to playing shows. We had one last week. We have one next week, and it's slowly opening up. We'll see how long this lasts, but
yes.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
What is it about Tom Hanks? Why does he rule the world? He gets something, and then we all start paying attention and shut down. Before that, it was like, well, if Tom Hanks is fine, we're probably fine. What is your perception of Tom Hanks in this scenario? Is he responsible in any way for how we're behaving?
Life is like a box of chocolates, is what I would say to that. And like, you never know what we're going to get, so we have to listen to what Wilson does, okay? And I'm going to show you my depth of Tom Hanks.
That was
Hanks
amazing.
Knowledge.
I'm waiting for the Bosom Buddies reference. That was amazing. Yeah. That was great.
I was going to go Philadelphia instead, but no, we'll just go here. Great actor. People like to listen to him more than us, or more than doctors, clearly. And that's when they decided COVID was real.
Well, I'm happy he seems to be a relatively nice guy, and progressive guy. Imagine he was a jerk and we were all like, well, whatever he says rules. So anyway, I'm sorry to do you, I know from what I've seen online mostly, because I don't believe I ever had the opportunity to see you guys live. Live shows are important to you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, we're the guys. We're a band that pretty much just lived live mostly, like more than the record. And having that go away really kind of changed our perspective on how to do music and what music is about. It's been a blessing and a curse, but like the pandemic, but in this time, like, we've really got to recenter ourselves and kind of figure out how we can continue doing our art despite a global catastrophe. Yeah. You know, and we found a way, you know, like, we released an album in this. I learned how to edit videos in this, and like, we're just gonna keep on going. But live shows is what we do. That's our thing.
I can kind of tell, like I say, from... Because you've done... How many virtual things have you guys done? You did something at the Horseshoe, right?
Yeah, I feel like we've done like three, and one is too much. Yeah. But we had to keep it going, and it was super fun, weird. I can say that our live shows had as much people as our last show in Toronto, which was the COVID show. So it was like riding a bike. I would say.
You feel like the band is still kind of on the come up. On some, like, how long has this band been together exactly? I know it's changed members as well, but how long would you say this band has been together? When did it start?
The band started in 2007. Me and the drummer started making music in 2003. We've been around for a while. We're always going to be fighting for something, yeah. You know, even if we ever do break through or whatever that means to anybody individually, I'll never feel like I had enough. Like, I'm going to kind of need more because I have a kind of. I've been told I have a chip on my shoulder how we've kind of been placed and received in this music industry. So, you know, I kind of always feel the need for more because we haven't really had as much as I feel like, think we've kind of deserved.
Fair. You come across very brash lyrically and on stage,
yeah.
From what I can tell. And I want to get into that a little bit. But let's expand a little bit about the way you feel you've been treated. Because that's what you're kind of getting at. And by the way, that's a long run. 2007, you've been playing with your drummer, you say, since 2003. So that's a long time.
You've been around, but I
appreciate your persistence. And that takes a lot of self-belief, if you will, or self-propulsion.
Delusion. Self-delusion is what you have to be crazy to keep doing this.
What is the relationship between you and the drummer, first of all? Because 2003, like, that's 18 years of playing together as we're speaking. What is that relationship? How do you two know each other? And if you like identifying your drummer by name...
Yeah, I guess we'll say his name. His name is Calanthony Humphrey. Honestly, he's my best friend. Like, we met through our sisters. My sister went to his high school, and right when I was getting into music and learning how to make beats, and it started off as a competition, as in, oh, you think you make beats better than me? and the competition has never died, you know? It's something that's always kind of fueled us. Like, oh, I got this lick. You hear this? You hear this music? You see what I've done with this? It's like a healthy fun, you know?
Yeah.
So we met way back then. We were just making beats back then. And
so how old a couple of people are you there at that point, would you say?
Got to be like 16. 17, okay. 18. Yeah, young.
So you're teenagers. So you're trying to assert yourself, learn new things, establish yourself a little bit. Okay. So that explains. And so you're just... You're bonded. It sounds like you might be bonded forever.
He's stuck. We're stuck. I was the best man at his wedding. I delivered the best speech ever. I would say his wife had me edit it, and I didn't appreciate it. but it was good. But it was good times.
Do you want to share the director's cut or anything that made the cutting room floor here?
I can't. I did it privately, though, but it involved me singing Queen to Be from Coming to America as their first song for their dance. Okay, so
they
didn't like that for some reason, and I was like, okay, what, are you going to let this artist live?
I'm the best man of all time, and you're stifling my creativity. That was your attitude?
Like, whose day is this about? Like, what are we talking about?
I'm the best man. Yeah, I'm the best.
Exactly. The best.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Anyway, okay, I appreciate that. It's a long relationship. I started to ask you about, to expand upon the way you've been treated in the Canadian music industry. Let's start with that, because I have my own opinions and experiences in this music industry as well. Yeah. I talked to lots of people about their own experiences. What would you want to say about yours and... in terms of where you started, how you've been treated, where you're at now?
Yeah, I will say us as a band, the OBGMs, we are more lucky than most. Like, we've had a tremendous amount of opportunities that most people, like, don't get. Like, we've been able to travel off of music, and I've seen things that I never knew existed. I say that to say that being... a black person in this alternative space isn't the most welcoming, and it's slowly becoming so. But if we're going to date it back to circa 2007, there was no real space for us. This was the height of Dipset, you know? So the Dipset G Unit. Like a lot of legends in hip hop were killing the game.
Okay? Sure.
And people weren't necessarily seeing themselves in a rock space, and representation is important. So since you can't see me there, it's hard for people to really associate me being dominant there, me being somebody that they would listen to there, because they don't see anybody else around me that looks the same. So we come in here with our experiences, both being from housing projects in friggin' Toronto, making music like that is representative of where we're from. Yeah. Like the lyrics are like what we're from. We're doing talking about what we're from, and the space doesn't look or sound anything like that. So it was really, really hard for people to, and still is to a lot to today, to get it, to get what are we actually trying to do. Like, we don't look or sound like a lot of people. Often in this industry, you'll encounter people that will ask you to change. Like, have you tried looking and sounding like everybody else? Mm. Have you tried doing other things and incorporating this part to your what you're from? And it's like a delicate and dirty dance. Like, what part of yourself do you give up to do this music shit that you love? Sorry for swearing.
You can swear. It's a podcast.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no. There's a quota. You can't. Well, there's a maximum, I guess.
Okay.
No. It's no. I hear what you're saying for sure. And I
it's tough.
As a person of color myself, I've experienced some of those things for sure. Do you have a sense of like? I feel like at this point, has anything changed? I feel like we all talk about incremental changes that are occurring societally, socially, but then when you talk to people who are still feeling marginalized, they're like, yeah, it's great that you think there's change happening and you're talking about it more, but material conditions for me are the same. The racism is systemic. Like, do you know what that means? Like, so are you, but at the same time, you know, as we're speaking, you're nominated for this award in Canada, the Polaris Music Prize. I think some heads have turned your way. But I don't think that absolves or suggests everything's fine now. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely, I would agree. I think, like, I'm trying to do this new thing where I celebrate small wins, and, like, I do see things changing. Can I feel it as yet? No. But I do see it changing. I see more artists of colors being comfortable picking up guitars and being in like rock and alternative spaces. There's such amazing artists that are out right now. Nova Twins, Oxymorons, Troy Irons. There's like a pop punk wave that's going with a lot of different black artists. And I think it's really, really cool. It's really, really different in a way. There are still some fundamental changes I would like to see in regards to how black artists are addressed and represented. If somebody was going to talk about a songwriter and looking for black artists, they wouldn't be looking for me that makes this rock music. If somebody was going to recognize a black musician, 9 out of 10 times it has nothing to do with what I do. And it's because we're still not represented in these spaces. They associate my skin color to hip-hop, which it is hip-hop. They associate it to R&B because it is R&B. But we just also do this stuff right over here. So I celebrate the small wins. I think this Polaris thing is probably like one of the best things that's happened to the band, because it let me know that like I don't have to change to get some of the recognition that like I think every musician would like. It's like really, really thoughtful, like to be amongst such amazing artists like Zune, like Helena DeLand, like there's somebody just amazing, Cadence Weapon, Claremont II, Rhymed, and the past winners as well, right? So to be associated with those types of artists is like a fantastic thing, and I'm just hoping that there's a difference between critical acclaim and commercial success, and I'm hoping that the commercial entities will take notice that there is a movement of different things happening, so it can be spread to the people in a more grand way, because slowly when people see themselves represented in these communities, it allows them to be accepting, it allows a different wave of music to be pushed forward, and that's what we're fighting for.
Well, that's well said. You said something about how there's a wave of black artists making pop punk, picking up guitars. Yeah. Do you, from your perspective, I mean, your perspective is going to be interesting because you've been, it sounds like, making this kind of music since at least 2007. But do you have a sense from your own perspective or just from what you're observing as to why this wave has sort of emerged?
Money. Money. No, money. Like money. Huh. Like money controls the industry. Money controls a lot of things. I think people ride waves that could potentially be financially beneficial to themselves. If you talk about the brass tacks of what music is, there's a music business as well outside of the art. And right now, pop punk has had a resurgence, and that resurgence has generated revenue. So I think the major players are seeing that there's a financial opportunity to place people in a light and push pop punk itself. So that means pop punk for everybody. White people, everybody. Huh. Everybody can do it. Now, I don't make pop punk. I don't find it me. It's not representative of where I'm from and what I do. But more power to it. I embrace different things. I embrace different looks. I embrace good music. So as long as good music is the first thing and moves forward, more power to it. It's not for me. But I love it. I love seeing different artists thrive. We got like Meet Me at the Altar. We got so many. We got Willow Smith doing things. You know, public figures that are doing really well. And I love it. I'd love to keep on seeing people do different things.
By your reckoning, who is a representative of pop punk? And, you know, to juxtapose that, who is an artist that, and I know you're going to, because you're, I can tell, you're confident. You're going to be like, there's no one like us.
It's true.
But, I would tend to agree. Like, I when I listen to your music, I pick out influences, but that's just what we do as music fans. We get a little reductive, I think, unfortunately, but it's just familiar. You look for the comfort. So like, oh, that reminds me of that. So, okay, now I have an entry point into what else is going on here. So sorry in advance for that. But just in your distinction between what pop punk is and what you are and what you're not, can you just give us a couple of signposts? Like who is a pop punk artist that you're nothing like? And then conversely, is there an artist you can think of that you wouldn't mind being grouped in with? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So we're unlike any pop punk artist because we don't make pop punk music at all.
Sure.
So that's one. we don't make anything like that. We're a little bit louder in our sound and style. Like I honestly and predictively can say that I don't really think there's a lot of bands that sound like us. And I think that people like me myself, I try to find who can I associate this with. How does this make me feel? And when I look for artists, and I often ask people, who do they think directly? And because bluntly put, I don't really know a lot about music. Like I don't know a lot, so I'm I like to know as much as possible. So like if somebody can show me an artist that does what we do on a record, by all means, I would love to be obsessed with them and know everything about that band. But not a lot of people do. We fuse a lot of different things. I haven't yet. And I've had this conversation like a lot over the last year since we released the Ends, the album.
Yeah.
And like I ask people directly, what does this sound like? And nobody's been able to really group us with something. Whereas pop punk, you can group everything with everything, right?
No one has mentioned any kind of art.
Same.
Right. But no one has mentioned any artists where you're like, okay, I can kind of hear that. I can kind of see that.
The artists that we hear the most that I'm like, yeah, it would be Test Icicles. This is a band from they broke up a long time ago, but I love those guys. They're great. Really, really great album. I would suggest everybody listen to them.
Yeah,
I've heard The Prodigy before, which I'm like,
The Prodigy.
Not over the course of the record, just because what people see is like, okay, you're kind of rapping, you're kind of singing, la la la, and they'll find a band that's kind of doing that.
Right.
I've heard early Arctic Monkeys, which has been like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, but like over a 10 song record.
Nothing.
Like, nah, there's nothing.
Okay.
There's nothing.
All right.
I would say the only people that I feel that I'm like, okay, like if we played a show, this wouldn't be such very drastically different. Nova Twins are amazing. They're amazing. They released a record in February of 2000, like of the pandemic year, whatever that was. All right. The years have blended together, you see.
Right.
So I would say like that band, like I think we share a lot of the same influences, whatever those are, because I think they sound kind of like us.
So,
or we sound kind of like them.
You've alluded to hip-hop and rap a few times, both in ways of like, that's just people seeing my skin color.
Yeah.
But then you also said, you kind of acknowledged that on occasion your singing is sort of rap singing, I think. You kind of said that. What is your relationship with hip-hop? Do you like hip-hop?
I love hip-hop.
You love hip-hop?
I only listen to hip-hop. I mostly listen to hip-hop outside of making music. You know? I tend to, especially when I'm in a writing phase, to only listen to things that are completely opposite of what I'm doing or what I'm trying to do. So I'm mostly listening to trap. I'm mostly listening to straight rap, hip-hop, boom-bap. That's what I'm listening to.
Uh-huh.
I love hip-hop. My cadences that I choose is just mostly just leaning into things that I think I'm better at. There are a lot of bands that have just phenomenal singers with unlimited range and limited vocals, and they can do whatever with their voices, whereas me, nah, not really. I never came into this to be a singer, so I'm gonna stick within my range and do what I do, which is shout. I shout I change my cadences a little bit.
Yeah.
and I hide behind that, and I really, really enjoy it, you know. So I just kind of lean into the things that I'm good at.
But you
love hip-hop.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You also said a moments ago you don't really know a lot about music, which was interesting. So people come to you with influences that they see, and you're like, okay, yeah, school me a little bit. Like, I don't know these bands you're talking about, which is fair. Yeah,
about rock music.
Rock music, yeah, sure.
Rock. Yeah,
let's make that distinction. Yeah. So rock music in particular, which begs the question, what were you listening to or exposed to, I suppose, even, that made you think, I'm going to pick up a guitar and use that as my primary tool of expression? Do you remember?
In high school, I played the trumpet and the French horn, and those were the least sexy instruments in the world, okay? Nobody ever says, play this trumpet solo for me. Nobody's ever said that ever. So I went to school for recording. I wanted to be a sound engineer at the time, and I found out quickly that everybody played like a different instrument. They all played either guitar, drums, or bass. Or piano. And if you didn't have any of those in your gamut, like, you were very, very restricted as to what you could do. So I had to play, I had to learn an instrument. So I started with piano. I was like, okay, I can't do that. That's not for me at that point in time. So I was like, okay, guitar is the next best thing. Let's do that. And at the time, like, I was just kind of looking for do something different. Like, Dipset was the biggest band at the time. I love music. So I was really, really looking through a lot of different soul records, 50s, 60s, 70s records, and I was going through all of that and realizing that back then everybody was playing the guitar. Everybody was kind of doing something.
Yeah.
And that was just normal back then. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to learn this guitar. And we're going to start a band. I didn't know what the band was going to sound like at the time, but I knew I wanted to start a band. And we kind of just went through like probably 20 members of people that we played music with. And it came to the point where I was like, okay, it's not working. We can't find what we actually want to do. Let's just be loud and let's do something rock, some rock stuff. There was one Toronto area act named the Carps, who since broke up, but lead singer, his name is Jamal Padmore, but I saw him on stage once and I was like, yo, this guy looks like me. His lyrics are representative of where we're from, and the show is like a really, really diverse and inclusive environment. I just felt so amazing there. And that was kind of like the last thing that kind of put me over. I was like, we're going to make a rock band. We're going to be loud. We're going to do something that is not on this scene. And we're going to continuously just do different things. F everybody else and what they have to say about it. And
that's where it came from.
That's where it came from.
Okay. Yep. So it's instantly attitude. Just instantaneous.
It's a chip on our shoulders. We got, and deserved or not, but it's there.
Yeah. No, I hear that. I hear it for sure. Okay, well, let's get into the ends a little bit here. We had alluded to the fact that there's obviously a pandemic. You guys basically shut down the concert industry from what you were saying earlier.
Yes, you're welcome. Everybody's welcome.
I imagine you made this record prior to the pandemic, yes?
Yeah. Yes, we did.
And so I'm curious about the motivations for it, because I was listening to it, and it's very aggressive. But then I urge everyone, if they have access to the lyric sheet, to spend time with it as I've done, because I was astonished by how dark it was, to be honest, and how aggressive it was. Can we delve into that? Like, it seems to me, on the one hand, oh, and then by the way, for anyone who hasn't seen the video for To Death or something like that, like, it is a very macabre, violent, is it wrong? I don't want to use the wrong words, but there's...
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah. So we're trying to make movies. I got into videos over the pandemic, and because we couldn't play shows, so what are we going to do? We got to do something.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to learn how to make videos, and I always hated performance videos, though. So, like,
People lip syncing and whatnot, like,
yeah, lip syncing and playing your songs, and we've done that a lot, right? So I feel like if you have an image, why don't you tell a story? So I've been trying to make, when I direct videos and edit videos, I try to make it a story, whatever story I can tell. I've been watching a lot of just murder TV, a lot of different dramas, high intensity dramas. So all the ideas that come out of me usually involve some type of like either sci-fi or dramatic type of storyline that I want to kind of execute in our videos.
What have you been watching? I'm just curious.
Oh man, I've been watching a lot. I watch a lot of TV. That's my thing.
Did you by chance watch that limited series, Your Honor?
Oh, of course I watched Your Honor. Yeah. Incredible. That was probably one of the best shows of last year. Euphoria, incredible show that are just like dark and this beautiful at the same time in the way they shoot it.
I brought up Your Honor because, and for those who haven't seen it, let's not ruin it for them because it's impossible. Like, it starts so harshly and then it keeps going and you're on the edge of your... I didn't particularly love the ending personally, but at the same time, it was it was very telegraphed poetic justice. Anyway, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone.
But it had to end that way.
It had to end that way, probably. But my point is, like, then I watched your video recently for To Death and I thought, there's a connection, like, so there's gunplay in that video, and so to speak. And then when I listen to you sing and your delivery, and I read the lyrics, I can't help but be worried about you a little bit. Like, there seems I'm a little concerned because it's really the record comes across as kind of like, fuck everything, nothing matters, and it's hard to shake. Like, it seems like custom built for a time where people are struggling with such thoughts and ideas during a pandemic and during, you know, these small civil wars that are going on around the world because people are finally fed up with, really, really fed up with racism, economic disparity, all sorts of things. Like, there's just a lot bubbling up, and I feel like your record anticipated it a little bit, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. Like, I think, like, well, the best way to put it is when I was making The Ends, I was questioning if I could do music anymore. To be a musician, like, you gotta be kind of crazy because it's a very, very expensive venture. It requires complete dedication, or I believe it does. And you have to bare your soul. You have to be willing to bare your soul, and you have to be able to risk like it all. And to release music, you're really, really releasing a part of yourself to people to interpret in whatever way they want to, and like. And sometimes they may see you there, and then they just let you go away, you know. And we've been in the band since 2007, and I was kind of just tired of everybody. I was tired of my bandmates. I was tired of myself for being my own obstacle. I felt like I was my own obstacle. I felt like I was leading my friends to failure. We're all dedicating our lives to this stuff, and I'm the guy you had to look to kind of lead and push this on. So, you know, I wanted to let people know that, like, this is not a game. Like, we're fighting for representation here. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a bunch of people be placed ahead of us that, like, more power to them. But why? Why are you not recognizing our contributions to this? Why don't you realize that this is based off of systemic racism? Do you realize that it is? Yeah. Let me paint the picture for you if you need it. And I was just sick of it. So I wrote an album which was filled with threats to the Canadian music industry in general. like honestly, we just want to be seen. We want to be heard, and we want people to know that what we're fighting for and who we're fighting for. This is not just for ourselves. We're trying to do something different. We want to be represented. And we won't take no for an answer. And that's kind of it, man. Like, pick a song. I'll choose a lyric for you.
That is super fascinating. And given what we're doing, you know, the timing of this, when we're doing this, it seems to have worked. You provoke the Canadian...
It's working. It's working.
You provoke the Canadian music industry, and they've come around on some level. What does that tell you? Well, you know what I mean? Like you said, this is a pretty significant moment for you in this band. What does that tell you? That you provoked...
It tells me...
That you provoked people, and they're here for you now.
Yeah, you know, like when we were making this album, I remember like I want the lyrics to say something and I want to embody like, it seems like people only listen when you're, sometimes when you're yelling, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
But like I look at Kanye West, or not even just yelling vocally, but like being loud.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Kanye West, I look at Kurt Cobain, I look at David Bowie, I look at Prince, and I look at some of the things they said. I studied some of their interviews, and I studied like why people were really fixated on their music and them as their identities. And I was like, oh, it's because they just don't give a shit. They don't care. They stopped caring. They stopped trying to be nice. They just started to be wholly consumed with what the message was, and for the better or the worse of that. Mm. And the message for us was, we're tired of not being noticed and everybody in our community not being noticed. We're going to fight for this, and fight us if you have a problem with it. But like, we're trying to unite people, and we're just lucky, honestly, to be honest, because like along the way, if you say it loud enough, a lot of people will hear it and they'll help out, you know.
Yeah.
This Polaris thing, I view it as a, hey, we see and we hear you, you know. So like, it's nice to be recognized when you're going through something, like and it doesn't necessarily need to be a nomination or anything like that. Even just like a hello can work from time to time, because like that recognition, when you're in these spaces, you never know what somebody's going through. Like, I've been really, really angry for a long time, and like, I'm slowly getting out of it, and I'm just appreciative with like how things have gone. And I know that, like, we still have to push further, so it's just easier for the next generation. Why this shouldn't have taken 15 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it my mission that any artist in the same position as me is empowered with knowledge and connections, that it won't take them this long to connect to what the music industry is.
Yeah.
And they won't have to compromise themselves to get to where they need to go. They'll be able to have all the information, and that's my mission going forward.
Well, I mean, that's a noble mission. I feel like, you know, if anyone's going to accomplish it, I can see you doing it.
We have to.
Just based on your drive. I want to draw us back to some genre conversations we were having, maybe as it relates to how you've been perceived and also how you've been accepted, because I've had a few conversations over the last 4 or 5 years about rock music. And its place in, you know, in critics' notebooks, if you will, like end-of-year lists, just the general acceptance. For years, decades, almost most of a century, folk, rock music, guitar-oriented music has dominated. And then with the rise of hip-hop, electronic music, all sorts of other genres, and by the way, I'm not discounting jazz or R&B or soul or anything like that, but there's been this sort of expectation that if I'm going to listen to and experience live music, there's going to be a guitar on stage, there's going to be drums on stage. But as I'm not trying to give you a horrible rudimentary history lesson, but I think most of this century has been dominated by synthesized sound of some sort of one sort or another. So I've had these conversations over the last few years with people. I just had one recently with Kevin Drew of Broken Social Scene.
Love.
Yeah.
Tell him I said hi.
I will.
I don't know him, but tell him.
Well, it was the context was he has this new solo album that's completely electronic that he made with an app. And I was trying to broach this. Like, you're a member of this indie rock band, and now you're making this different kind of music or whatever. But anyway, he pushed back on me on my argument, which is that things like Polaris, for example, like, look at the last, I don't know how many winners. Like, it's been a while since a guitar-oriented, focused artist has won, and which is fine. I'm not complaining about it. But when you talk about how you're marginalized because of race and maybe the things you're saying, is there any part of you that feels like the music you're making, punk-oriented rock music, if you will, and I don't mean to be reductive?
No, I love
but
it.
But that you're talking about how there's money in it now, and that's why there's a resurgence. You're seeing all these bands come out. That hasn't been my experience as much, and I think the collective experience is there's like, who's the biggest rock band in the world right now? Probably still Foo Fighters or something. Like, who is it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, who's dominating the musical conversations? It's generally not loud rock bands anymore, which is great. They had their day, but you're a loud rock band trying to push through. Sorry, do you hear where I'm coming from a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think I'm hearing a lot of different things. I would say that the guitar music, and I was having actually a conversation about this not too long ago, of like the rock star being dead. Like, we grew up in an era where we got to witness a bunch of different rock stars. Jack White is a rock star. Kurt Cobain was a rock star. Jimi Hendrix was a rock star. Yeah. An identifiable personality that played a guitar and curated a sound that really changed the generation of musicians that went after that. Now, the way music is consumed is completely different. It's mostly delivered to you electronically. Nobody's taken trips to the CD store, to talk to the CD guy or girl or them, whoever it is, and getting curated picks for themselves. It is algorithmically delivered to you in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A computer decides what you should listen to.
Based on other things you've been listening to, supposedly.
Based on other things you've been listening to additionally, and based off of what needs to be promoted.
Yeah.
Like a playlist. The playlists that are delivered to you, the most popular playlists that people are listening to, how do they get the orders that they are in?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? Like, I don't know. I don't have the knowledge, but I would just ask, like, how does that happen like that? How do we know Jersey Drake, shout out to Jersey Drake, is going to be on all of them? How do we know this electronic drum rock band is going to be on all of them? Like, why is it structured that way?
Right.
Unfortunately, depending on who you speak with, there is an algorithmic formula as to how you are delivered your items.
Right.
And you're listening. And it just has killed rock stars. Like, a lot of that can be personal.
Rock stars or rock music, though? There's a distinction.
I think rock music.
Right.
Rock music, and a lot of that, like, I don't want to take a personal accountability away from anything. Supply and demand is a thing. Yeah. It is a real thing. Some people want to listen to different things. There was a whole 80s that was all electronic. Right? And that wasn't that bad. I liked 80s music. I don't know if everybody else liked it, but I loved it. Like, that happened, and maybe we're just in the 80s again. Mm. But I do believe it's trending back the other way, into where, like, a band that makes live music and does pretty much whatever they want to do can be received just a little bit better. But there's just some obstacles that you have to overcome in how people are grandly delivered music, what music is written about. I think we're in an age, just to kind of harp on Foo Fighters being, like, one of the most popular bands ever. Dave Grohl, flipping legend. If I was going to talk about, like, the top 10 grossing bands or top 10 bands, I'm mostly thinking about bands that have been in there for, like, 20 and 25 years. Why?
Yeah.
Like, why is that?
Right.
Why am I still talking about the Foo Fighters? I love them. Don't get me wrong. Flipping legends. They deserve it. But what else is out there? Now, talk about Canada. There are a lot of bands that have been grandfathered that deserved it because they did their work into the industry. But I believe the Canadian industry can do a better job of developing talents as exports to help change the way it looks and feels. How do we change the way this looks and feels? What's coming out of this country to represent us? Is it still going to be a band from 20 years ago, the last rock star left? Or are we going to look at what's going on the ground floor? Because there's a lot of cool things going down at the ground floor right now.
But I mean, to your point, I agree with you. I mean, there are some major media outlets in this country that are still like, if Weezer, Blink 182, Foo Fighters do anything, it's a major news story, and they're popular news stories. So there's a demand. They're meeting that demand to cover these bands that have these, like, long careers and cults, like serious cult audiences. And I mean, cults suggest small, but they're not even small. There's just, they know if they do a Blink 182 or Weezer story, even if some of us are like, okay, who cares, you know, at this point. By the way, I was in the Weezer fan club in 1994. So
I love Weezer.
You love Weezer? I will say, if I may, and I said I would keep this to myself, but when I hear your record, that is a band that came to mind. Not maybe...
I love it. I accept it.
Okay.
Because I think all my friends are probably in the most representative
of... Yes, it's more the guitar band arrangement than your delivery, of course. Like, Weezer was like, I don't even know who would be fronting Weezer with you at the helm, to be honest. It's a demonic, angry man of some sort. You know, is it Rob Halford from, like, Judas Priest or something? I don't know. It's probably not that. But yeah, it's you And then, I mean, I don't know if you are a fan or know the gentleman in the band Pup, who also...
Oh, yeah, Steph Helt on this record.
Right, there you go.
Steph Helt on this record.
Yeah,
man.
So Pup...
Like, Pup is the legends. Pups are the legends, and they don't get enough respect.
And I think like they are doing something with punk, pop-oriented yeah. punk, if not pop punk,
yeah.
where I can see some lineage. Like,
yeah.
I'm friends and friendly with the people in Fucked Up, and they've done yeah. something with melodic hardcore... that I think cool. transformed the city of Toronto on some level. Like, all these bands popped up. And so, yeah, anyway, all this to say, I think there's a community of loud, guitar-oriented punk and hard rock music, but I don't know that the ink is spilled on them the way it once was. And to Kevin's point, maybe that's Kevin Drew's point, maybe that's fine. They had their day. But then when I think mm-hmm. of you and how you're trying to break through on multiple levels... After years of being, I think you're basically saying you've been ignored. It's definitely, I know this, I know there's systemic racism, but is it also the music? Like, is it just not in yeah. fashion to spend time covering a band like yours? So anyway, it's very complicated, yeah. I think.
I think it's a chicken and egg thing, yeah. right? Like, supply and demand is a real thing, and I don't think anybody needs to, like, overplay, like, what that means. The more people want something... the more it's going to be supplied, though there's too much of it is supplied. And eventually the demand reduces, you know. So it is a real thing, right? So it could definitely be the music. But I would say there's still an element, like economics kind of, I think, in my, me personally, I think it kind of just rules everything. And unfortunately, it pulls levers one way or another.
Yeah.
I personally feel we're in the point of oversaturation of the same things.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the money is still behind it to push those same things to you. You yourself have identified that if Weezer puts out a record, they, I mean, they put in the work, by all means, they're going to promote that more. If Foo Fighters mentions anything, they're going to promote
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah.
And so now, why is that? You're doing it for clicks. You're doing it for money.
Yeah.
You're not doing it for the art. You're not doing it because it's better. You're just doing it because this is an identifiable name that a lot of money has already been spent on.
Yeah.
So it's easier for people to recognize them over the OBGMs. Or who's heard of that name? You know? But, like, who's to say that the OBGMs, that a Pup, that a Dirty Nil, that a these bands that are still, like, have another level to go aren't doing things that are better.
Yeah, no, exactly. Good. Yeah, they're just not getting the exposure or the coverage, and that's where I think that's part of where you're coming from. I guess what I'm saying is it seems to me that you said earlier you're going to fight, and you're going to fight to push things through. There's a few battles, different battles you need to fight coming from where you're coming from. Is that fair?
Oh, for sure. It's all a fight, and honestly, we're game for it. A lot of people, when they interpret fight, they interpret violence, they interpret anger, they interpret la 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 la. I don't think confrontation is a bad thing, as long as it's respectful. Like, we're not trying to piss anybody off. We're just literally going to tell you our perception of things.
Absolutely.
We're going to ask an honest question and ask you to review how you feel about it. And if we change your mind, fantastic. Welcome to the family. If we don't, by all means, let's shake hands and still be family. Like, we're good. It's not all about anger. It's not all about aggression. It's all about just standing up for something that you believe in. I believe that the industry was built in a way that systemically disadvantages people of color, particularly as it relates to me doing rock music, but in a lot of different ways. And if we look at the data, I'm confident that it will support that. Now, the other part of it is that what do you do to change it? Are we just going to talk? No. We got to make some progressive actions. We got to put our own money and our own collective resources to where our mouths are so we can start adjusting change, because one of the main languages, unfortunately, is money. And the money comes with the people. If we have the people that connect with the message, the money will come later. Let's just focus on building a community of people that are accepting and inclusive and that are fighting for each other. And that doesn't mean we're boxing it out. It just means we're grouping together as a unit and clenched like a fist. We're together. You know, that's what I mean.
Well, the title, The Ends, to me, has a few different meanings in this regard, because you're talking about money and capital. That's, for some of us, that's what The Ends means. It's the money, or not having the money, for one thing. And it's also a means to an end comes to mind, which is more about, I don't know, production, you know, making things, or you know, producing something, I suppose. But then as I ponder the kind of stark imagery of the record and the lyrics, like the end, it's not just the ends, it's this might be the end for you, not you, Dens, but whoever you're addressing. Like, if you fuck with me, that might be the end. And so there's a lot. Am I wrong on any of these levels?
Yeah. Like, you know what? I don't know. It's tough to say.
The album starts with you saying, I'll fuck you up. I'll meet you outside and I'll fuck you up. So I know these are like, I assume these are narrative devices, but when I think about, absolutely, there's many allusions to the narrative voice of each song saying, I need money.
Yeah.
Like this, I got to get cash. Yeah. Like I have to survive.
Money, run your shit. I'm needing all the cash. That's
a
lot.
Yeah. 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 So that's why I'm like, the ends to me is an interesting title.
Yeah.
An image.
The ends, I was looking to paint a picture as to my emotional roller coaster until I got to the end of the album. I would say, Vish, that you are the first person that recognized that I meant the money, the ends, in the ends as well.
Yeah. Okay, good.
But thank you very much.
You're welcome.
But like, I meant the end of all things. I also meant the ends, but I also meant the end of things, like a finality. I didn't know we were actually going to even make this album because I was afraid of doing something like this. I was afraid, like, imposter syndrome is a real thing. Maybe I'm not good enough. Like, maybe it is the music. Maybe it's just that it's just not good enough, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
And if it's not good enough, like, what do I need to do? Do I need to sell out? Do I need to make something that sounds something like other things? What is the end to this? What's the end game?
Right.
So, you know, if you go through, like, track by track, you'll kind of just see, like, my emotional roller coaster that I kind of just been going through the whole time, which is sometimes I want to fight. Sometimes, honestly, like, it's hard to wake up for the next day.
Where I get concerned, because I get that you're trying to make ends meet as well, which I didn't include in my litany of end-related
things. I appreciate that you did.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. I appreciate where you're coming from, but it does... Yeah, and I get that it's a narrative voice. I've been really, as we're speaking... There was a brief, fleeting moment where I thought I might get to speak to Quentin Tarantino about his new novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that prompted me... I'm still waiting for the book, actually, to show up in my house, but that's an aside that doesn't matter to you, but...
It does. I love Quentin Tarantino. I watch his movies, and I get inspired by his
movies. I was listening to your record just more thoroughly, I should say, in preparation for this conversation, just after going through my own Quentin film festival of just going through all the films and so I appreciate violence that can seem cartoonish like heightened, like a heightened I'll fuck you up, like the threats that are going on, but I really appreciate this conversation about where these ideas were coming from a place of both desperation but also like we will be represented whether you like it or not. So I appreciate all of that, and I appreciate that you're self-aware of it, because I would hate... Some of the themes are pretty dark, and I will say nihilistic. And I worry, I'm a bit sensitive to art that delves into those realms, because I've, as a fan and friend, I've lost people. So I get worried a little bit. So I don't mean to under... I don't mean... When I say I'm concerned, I maybe had a comedic lilt to it. But I you're good? You're okay, Dens?
Oh, yeah. Everybody has their own interpretations of the music. But the good thing is that art is therapeutic.
Yeah.
Music does something to your body, like, on a very, very animal level. But I think it's healing. Like, I have a small niece. When I turn music on, no matter what the genre is, she dances. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that? Because there's something that happens in our bodies when we hear these shapes, these sounds, and I think it's something positive. Why is she happy? Yeah. What does she know about this? does she know the record? Like, no, what does she know about this?
Honestly, kids love music.
Yeah,
it used to happen with my kids all the time. My son liked the Beastie Boys when he was like 3 or 4 or 5.
Ooh, classy.
And then we would play the Beastie Boys, and my daughter would just involuntarily, like, she was one.
Yeah.
She's younger, and she just lost it. I have like a little clip of like every time I played the song Check It Out, which is the stammering... I wasn't stammering. That's what the song is called. Anyway, she would just involuntarily like, oh, that's the song I like. So, yeah, music is important. I recognize in you someone who values it and is dedicated to it. And you're not... I'm glad we talked about how long you've been doing this, because for some people, they're like, OBGMs, what is this Polaris nominee? Like, who is this?
Who are
there must be some overnight sensation. I appreciate your persistence.
My favorite bands, Billy Talent, Pup, just to name a couple, but like, I remember like reading about them, like reading in like little interviews and stuff like that, just how long it took them. You know, they had to work really, really hard. And like, I think it was like the 10 and 11 year mark before anybody really paid attention to Billy Talent. And I was like, you know what? Like, this isn't anything new. It takes a long time to kind of develop yourself. And it's important to be aware of that. It's not that bad of a thing.
Yeah.
But they're just, my only thing was just that there's just some other factors that are stopping you from being aware of me.
Absolutely.
But our
lives are long. Our lives are long. Like, yeah. The other side of it where I was going with Kevin is like, I'm sick of seeing established artists who are like in their early 40s being tossed off as yesterday's news.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that part either.
But no.
I appreciate your persistence in sticking it out, because it's not easy. This is not easy to make art.
If it was easy, everybody would do it. I will say, by the end of the ends, like, you do get to see my brighter side. After all this destruction, the ability to know and be self-aware that it might be time to move on is something that kind of everybody needs to know. Like, yeah. What is it? Can you be fixated on this one problem forever? Are you going to honestly just be self-aware and be humble enough to know that it's time to move on, and whatever that means. Like, for me, moving on doesn't mean giving up.
Yeah.
It means time to get to the next level of this game. I treat this life like a video game. Every single lesson that I've learned, good experience and bad, that I've been lucky to have all of them, they're meant to teach you something that you need to learn to get to the next level. And honestly, I think we're learning it every day. I learned through this experience of making this album where I didn't hold anything back, that I can be myself and get to where I need to go. It just might be harder. And honestly, I love it. I love all the people that really would even take the time to listen to us, man. We really appreciate it. We appreciate being around any of those amazing artists that are around here. Like Zune. I was talking to Zune. I was like, yo, this is fire.
Yeah, the Zune record's great. Yeah.
It's really, really good. Yeah. This is really, really amazing. Savannah Ray, Toby, you know, like all those records are. Mustafa's records even really.
Yeah, it's
good.
Lovely.
Even good. Of course, you already know. but like, it's just yeah. It's just a bunch of cool music, cool people, and we're humble. Like, outside of this aggression that like I'm displaying, like, we're absolutely humbled to be a part of this. Like, and we thank everybody that kind of made this happen. You know.
Well, I appreciate your humility and your confidence, if I may. I'm curious, Denz, like, so record came out before the pandemic. Have you, and, you know, things are now just loosening up. Are you someone who writes in isolation and brings things to the band, or do you have to be together? I guess I'm just curious if you've been writing or recording or anything like that.
Good question, man. You know, when we've made music, I've found the most success being alone. One of the things before the ends was, I was like, yo, I don't know if I can even make songs anymore. Like, they're not good. Everything that was coming out of me was just straight garbage. And the drummer in my band, Cole Anthony, had to pull me aside and go like, yo, what is your problem? to the point where I just started going to the studio a lot more regularly just to be alone. I would sit there for 6 and 7 hours, leave, get there at 4, leave at 1, and come out with nothing, and literally just be sitting in silence for months and months and months at a time, till eventually it started happening, like, started making music. So like, I really do enjoy the chaos of making something alone, but I'd say what it did to me, like, was good and bad. I had a conversation with Cole Anthony just the other day. He was like, you started coming to the studio alone, but when you start coming here alone, you start to feel like you're by yourself, and you might not be by yourself. There can be a bunch of other people around you that want to help. You just have to let them in. And like, honestly, it kind of changed my whole vibe. So like, this record, I do still enjoy making music by myself. I'm consistently writing. I like the math behind it. So I try to get to 25 voice notes, which is different ideas, whether I'm humming, like, every week, whatever it is. Just make sure I do 5 a day, and by Friday, see where I'm at and see which ones I like and try to make songs out of those ones on the weekend.
Oh, I see.
I like the math behind it. But but like, this time I want to be more inclusive in the process. Like, I'm blessed to work with two other amazing musicians, man. Joey Brosnan and Cole Anthony Humphrey. They're amazing musicians, man. And they definitely have something to offer. So we're trying to work our way to do what I do and what we do together, because I think what we do is very, very powerful. But I wasn't mentally prepared to do it with other people. I was afraid that if I let people into this process, they're going to shut it down. They're going to say, this is not good. They're going to make me feel insecure about what I'm doing, yada, yada. I had like severe, severe imposter syndrome. I couldn't take criticism very well at the time. Or not that I didn't take it well. It's just that I wanted to be the best. These are my guys.
Yeah,
to be the best for them. So whatever we can do to make it the best. But in that process, you don't get to show your true self if you're considering everybody else. And scheduling, like getting 3 and 4 people all in the same place at one point in time, I hate that part.
Particularly during a pandemic when there's protocols and whatnot.
We couldn't meet. Like, we literally. Yeah. So it's been fun. I'm excited to see what we do next because, The Ends was made in 2019, and I have just so much more music to go. Even the songs that didn't make The Ends are actually really good. But we'll see if they ever see the light of day. And I do think this process, the next album that we do is going to sound different. We're just going to keep on doing different things.
So by the sounds of what you're saying, then, you haven't begun that process for a next record.
We have.
Okay.
We have, yeah. So we should be recording pretty soon, I think by September.
Oh, so you've got songs written.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
amazing.
We're ready. Yeah, we're doing really well.
That's great.
We're blessed. We're blessed. We're blessed to do what we do. And I just want people to hear it. But it's just weird, right? Because we made an album in the pandemic that we didn't get to tour. And we're a band that thrives at touring and getting people to understand the music. Since it's different, sometimes people need that live element to kind of just, oh, I get it. It just adds another little layer to it. So we can show you all these new songs, but we haven't even heard these songs live.
Well, I've made the point a few times with different guests. I think as a musician, I would always learn about the song by playing it live.
Yes. Oh,
so,
yes.
So, yeah, on the one hand, it's for the audience to process your new record live. Yeah. But then as a band, you're on tour. If you're on tour every night or if you're playing the songs every night, you're like, sometimes you're like, I don't actually like this song. The one we put on the record, you know what? I don't like, do you like playing it? And everyone's like, no, I don't like it. I didn't want to say anything. So you learn about yourselves and the songs the flip side is holy shit, you're singing a lyric. And you're like, oh my God, I didn't know. I just realized what I'm saying. I just realized what that means, that I'm saying that. And so that's what I mean. That relationship you have to the song in a live setting and that repetition of doing it, that's really important. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's the most important. Yeah. For us, we don't go into any show with a set list. So we kind of just check the vibe and try to feel the vibe of what the people, where the people are at, what the vibe of the room is, before we kind of go through the emotions and just try to help them get to where we want them to go, and we all kind of get there together. You find out a lot. You find out, what can you do to make this more thematic? How do you extend this? What do you want them to hear? What do you want them to take away from this song? I think that's probably one of the things that Steph actually helped me learn a lot about just making music. Where
Steph Babcock from Pup,
Flipping Gentleman and Scholar, the best friggin' person, period, period, person.
I know, Steph is great. Yeah.
So he asked me a question that I didn't have the answer to, which was what do you want people to get out of this, this line? Why are you saying this? And I was like, what? It rhymes, baby. I don't know. And it kind of made me really, really, he gave me some advice that I tell everybody I can. Hopefully he's okay with it, which is that, he's basically the verses, 70% of the verses, people probably haven't even heard. But they do hear the choruses. So really, 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 really make sure that what you want people to hear, you enunciate and say it in a way that they can hear it. And I'm blows my mind. I literally rewrote the Ends when he said that. It blew my mind. And it seems basic, but it changed how I interpreted music. It changed what I yelled about.
A song is a communication, I think.
Exactly.
A song is, you're communicating something. And so I grew up listening to hardcore punk and playing hardcore punk, and we would just scream lyrics some of us spent time working on, but then when you heard the recording or saw the band, it would just be like noise, guttural noise. But then you'd look at a lyric sheet, as I am a lyric sheet person, right?
Love it.
So I'd look at the lyric sheet and be like, oh, that's amazingly clever, but I have no idea based on this recording that that's what's going on. That's the case for lots of different metal, hardcore, certain kinds of punk, where it's just part of the aesthetic to scream it. Steph from Pop is someone who enunciates. He's a singer, and you are too, but still, for those who haven't heard the band yet, there's some distortion. There's an effect that is a haunting effect that I think has been applied to the production in your band, and when it breaks through and there's a break and you just hear your voice, I know that I know anger is based on vulnerability. Mm-hmm. I know that assertion and aggression is based on a little bit of fear, if you will, yes, or like
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I know that there's a lot of emotion going on in the decision, even to be like, I want this to be a little submerged in the mix. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to know exactly what I'm saying. I want there to be mystery, because you're hiding a little bit. So
you're telling me.
I hear that in all the aggression. I invoke Tarantino because it's a heightened form of violence that we're meant to know. I think those of us, I mean, there's been a real problem in the world with people thinking that fiction is fact, or like they can't interpret movies as like, they like, oh, that's a good idea. I will go and shoot some people. That's happening across the board around the world now.
Yeah.
And those of us who have been free speech advocates and supporting art have to reckon with that, I think. Like, some people don't know that it's a movie, that it's not real. When I hear your songs, I take that into consideration, that that aggression you're putting forth is coming from a real place, I think, of pain. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're going to go and do the things you're singing about every day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, it's not like we've, like, oh, and I really want to make it clear. It's not like we've, because lyrically, every single word is real.
Yeah.
Every single word is a thought that has come through my mind. But there's, like, a step before that everybody really kind of needs to dial back into what reality is and not take that step.
Right.
Like, I'm not out here fighting everybody. I'm not out here robbing everybody. That don't make no sense. That don't make no sense. But if you listen to track 1 and 2, it sounds like I might be. But, like, you know, but I know that's not going to get my point across. That's not the point. The point is that I'm angry and it's okay to be angry.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with having anger. Anger is a natural emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about how you cope with it. This is how I cope with it. I'm able to be honest with how I feel. Like, I feel that our industry, a beautiful industry with amazing musicians over here, can do a little bit more to assist an artist in my position, an artist that looks like me. And it makes me angry because I feel helpless in that moment. And there's nothing wrong with pronouncing what that anger is. Just don't do dumb shit, though. Don't do the dumb shit.
No, I know that's where you're coming from. So I'm glad you said that. And that's my perception of it as well. I want to ask you, so we've kind of talked about what's next in terms of you guys working on a new record, probably this fall by the sounds of it. Yeah. Hopefully, I assume it's still too nebulous to suggest you might be hitting the road. Or are there plans at this point to do some touring?
There's plans. Like, I will say that there are plans for us to go on the road. I think everybody wants to get on the road right now. It's such a beautiful thing. I'm seeing all these acts really, really announce dates around the world. And I think everybody's just trying to figure it out still right now. So it's a little early to say, like, what we got cooking up. But there's a couple things that, if they happen, it would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm still in a daze, though. Like, this has been a long time without, like, live music and touring and stuff like that. Even longer for us, because we played our last real show before the show that shut the city down. We played it in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah. We were on tour in Europe with a band named Mando Dio. And when I got back, I was like, I think I'm done with music.
Right.
Because, like, one, I'm not good enough. Two, I hate how it makes me feel, this feeling. I hate this feeling.
Yeah.
and how do I stop it? So, like, I stopped talking to everybody for a year, and then we came back, and I was like, we have to do this. We can't leave like this. It don't make no sense. There's more to do, and we can't go without the message, with the message being left unsaid. We have something to say, still. So we got a lot of cool things coming, I think. I hope they happen. I hope everybody stays healthy and safe so they can happen. And if they do happen, Jesus, wow.
Exactly.
It could be life-changing.
That's everyone's,
it could be life-changing.
Yeah, that's everyone's sentiment right now, for sure. Yeah. Well, if people want to learn more about the ENDS and the OBGMs, where would you like to send them using, you know, the tools at our disposal in the current age?
Yeah, absolutely. The internet? wow. Well, the best place to find us is probably on our Instagram right now, which is the OBGMs, THEOBGMS. That's us, at on everything, really.
Yep.
And you can really just find everything that we're doing on there. I would say listen to the music, listen to the album. We don't just talk about ourselves. We also like to promote other artists that we really, really like to see. So let's just share some music. If you guys have any music you want to send to me, by all means, like, I like being a student to this. I like learning more. If there's something that you can teach me about anything, I'd love to know. So hit us up. Don't be shy. We're very friendly. at the OBGMs on everything. And that's the best place to find us.
Okay, cool. Now, Danz, if we want to go out, I'd like to go out, if possible, on a song from the ENDS, just so people can get a sense of what we've been discussing. And if that's cool with you, can you pick a song and also let us know why you chose it?
Yeah. It's a tough question, man. One song. I'm gonna choose Outsa. That's track one.
Album opener.
Album,
look at
album
that.
Album opener.
Okay.
The reason why is I remember making that song really, really well. I was making a bunch of songs, like, alone, and I was scheduled to go meet some producer to help us structure and maybe help uplift our songs. And I remember that was, like, the last song I put down. And, like, lyrics unchanged, or mostly for the most part. And when we actually, and just, like, we never ended up changing anything with that song. It's, like, I feel it's, like, one of the most truest representations of what we bring to the table, what we bring to this music. We're doing things that you might not have heard before. In the actual recording with Dave Schiffman, the song had no chorus before, if it has one now. but it definitely had no chorus before. And I remember bringing my friend Roberto Molina of a band named Tonix to play bongos on it. And Dave Schiffman kind of changed the arrangement of some of the things that we did, and then dropped the full drums right on the first right when the first verse started.
Yeah.
And he stood back and he said, "That's how you make a record." And I was like, God damn, I'm writing a chorus now. And literally right after that, like maybe 10 minutes later, I was like, "Don't you meet me outside, you meet me." And then I went in the booth and I did it. And we all sat back there with the representation of where we're from, with the screw face. Okay. Everybody had the screw face on. And I was like, this changes everything. Like, this is exactly how it should have been. And I kind of went back to a lot of the choruses on the album, and I just, and you probably, if you knowing that, you'll probably know which choruses I went back to, and I changed them. and I changed them. I went to change Move On, I went to change All My Friends, I went to change Cash, and I just changed how I enunciated things.
Yeah.
So you heard that I am very serious, and it just felt so freeing. Like, and I still don't know much bands that sound like that. It's a good introduction. Listen to the whole album. It's only 20 minutes. It's only 20 minutes. Like, we're not. It's not a huge undertaking. But that's my favorite song on the album.
Well, it's a really great record, and I appreciate your emotion and your heartfelt authenticity. Like, it just feels very authentic as an expression, and that's something that means a lot to me. And I know it means a lot to lots of people. So let's hear "Outsaw" by the OBGMs from this amazing new record, The ENDS. And Danz, this was a pleasure for me. I hope you enjoyed it, and I wish you the best luck in the future.
I had such a great time, Vish. Thank you so much for even taking the time to speak with us. Big shout out to everybody from Polaris for all that, you know. And come to our show when it's safe to. And it should be a good time.
I'm there. You should come to Edmonton where I live. That would be fun.
Hopefully it's in the plans. Hopefully it's in the plans. That's all I can say.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/news ad free. That's Amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, thanks once again to Dens McFarlane of the OBGMs for appearing on this, the 628th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One Podcast Network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. Everywhere, I believe, at this point. If you can't find an episode you're looking for some reason, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, everything you desire is at my website, vishkhanna.com. Everything you desire in that regard, not beyond those things. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, I suppose. You can also follow the show on Twitter, at vishcreative, or follow me directly, at vishkhanna, on Instagram and Twitter, as a matter of fact. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 or more grants you access to exclusive content. And by the way, if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. A fellow named Adam recently did this and then he got a shirt and then he told me it looked good. He was happy with it. So that could happen to you. You could be just like Adam if you want. Again, patreon.com/creativecontrol for more info. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. Hamilton and Guelph are both in Ontario, Canada. Thanks to all of those organizations and businesses and companies and what have you for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie, also of Ontario, Canada, for letting me use some of his music on the show. You can learn more about Jim at his website, jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you to, you know, for listening to this episode with Dens from the OBGMs. I hope you enjoyed it. Maybe you're new to the show. Welcome. Appreciate you being here. Maybe check out the rest of the show. Some of the bands we talked about, I think, some of the members, I should say, have been on the show. So dig deep if you want to. If not, thanks for checking it out. And for everyone else, please keep listening. Tell your friends maybe about the show. Subscribe to it. Spread the word if you can. That all helps. Anyway, I will talk to you very soon. Hope you're well. And thank you. And bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.